You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com. Join in on the conversation. Visit the sidebar at wearelibertarians.com and join our Facebook group, meet other listeners, and get our daily news dump.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty, rock and roll.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
It's time to shake up your podcast feed, folks, by subscribing to Lions of Liberty, the only libertarian variety show out there. Spend Mondays with me, Mark Claire, as I feature in-depth interviews with great names in the libertarian community and fun roundtable discussions.
Electric Liberty Land with me, Brian McWilliams, every Wednesday, your weekly dose of comedy, culture, and liberty.
And Felony Fridays with me, John Odermatt, where I expose injustice in the broken criminal justice system.
Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at lionsofliberty.com.
The Boss Hog of Liberty podcast is the latest hit on the We Are Libertarians Network. Each week, Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis explore life in Henry County, Indiana.
It's a show about our circle of friends, public officials, and our experiences. 80% observation, life, humor, and 20% politics. Boss Hog of Liberty is the day-to-day happenings of Henry County, Indiana, which is just like your community. Add us on iTunes and sample us today.
Dear Leader would want you to.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. Think of us as the love child between National Review and Mad Magazine. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world, how we can fix it by thinking differently. We try to make you sound smart when you talk with your friends. So please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us at Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. There on the right side. We are supported by listeners like you, so $5 a month and up helps us grow, and we are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. If you are new to the program, we catch up for the first little bit. This episode's a little bit different, and then we deep dive into analyzing current events and society from a libertarian perspective. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so please be warned, the language is strong and offensive. My name is Chris Spangle. I am the host and the founder of We Are Libertarians. We started in 2012, 5.5 years ago. With me on the Tuesday show, we record Tuesday nights, an episode, Harry Price and I. Harry, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. And then, as most of you, some of you know, we record on Thursday nights with Greg Linz and Kat Anagnos, and then that is a different type of show. And this show is more of a news. We catch up on the news, take the big stories of the day, and try and explain what's happening. And so you basically... When you hear the word DACA, you know what's going on. Now, we're also joined by Brian Nichols, who is a contributor to the Libertarian Republic and has a podcast of a podcast that I have no idea what the name is. Brian, what is it?
It's the Around the Republic podcast.
The Around the Republic. The Around the Republic podcast on YouTube.
YouTube, and we're getting our podcast app up soon.
Awesome. Very good. So be sure to check that out and support those guys. You're a big fan of Austin Peterson, I would imagine, if you're at the Libertarian Republic.
He's my boy.
Before we jump into that, I do want to say you may hear some noise in the background. If you're watching on YouTube or in our Dear Leaders circle, our Facebook group where we live stream, it may sound a little bit different, and that's because we have the windows open behind us and all around us because my air conditioning is broke, and Dear Leader cannot stand to be hot. So you behind me is a black curtain that always has lights on it, but it's opened up and you now see the beautiful outside behind me. So I apologize if there's some noise in the background. That's what that is, but hopefully you won't send it, hear it with our processing. But Brian, you are a big fan of Austin Peterson, and he is running for what, where, and in what party?
Yes. So, yeah, Austin Peterson, back on July 4th of this past summer, announced that he would be seeking the candidacy for the Republican Party for the United States Senate seat in Missouri to dethrone the incumbent Democrat Claire McCaskill. So that's where we're at. Austin is the, I think, one of two announced Republican candidates for the Senate seat. Currently, he is seemingly the front runner. The other top competitor, Hawley, he has not yet announced, though is believed that he will announce at some point in time, who is the current attorney general in Missouri. So, yeah, that's where we stand with Austin. Austin's been going out, you know, shaking a lot of hands, going door to door, a lot of county fairs and such, and making a pretty big grassroots effort to try to bring some liberty to the Republican Party.
Okay. How do you feel about that, Harry, bringing liberty to the Republican Party?
I think it's an uphill battle, but it's a battle worth having. I think Austin Peterson is testing out Greg's theory that parties are just empty vessels to, you know, effect change into. So, good. If he gets more liberty out of it, more power to him.
Now, Austin Peterson, for those who do not know, ran for the Libertarian Party presidential nomination. Formerly, he started the Libertarian Republican Liberty Viral websites, of which Brian is a contributor. And he used to work for the National Libertarian Party. That's where I met him in 2010 when I was with the Libertarian Party of Indiana, and he was with the National Libertarian Party as a volunteer coordinator. He's done some other stuff. He runs. He's a great communicator for liberty, is he not, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one thing that we can all agree on is that Austin has a really a unique way that can connect with people of very differing perspectives to try to bring some unifying message of liberty. I mean, we saw during his run back in 2016 where there were those in the GOP or those disaffected conservatives who were looking for a true alternative between what was Donald Trump as a faux Republican and then Hillary Clinton as a neoconservative Democrat, essentially. And I think Austin was really able to help bridge that gap and bring some liberty to the forefront. And he got a lot of pretty respectable support from the likes of, you know, Liz Mayer, Glenn Beck, even Eric Erickson, you know, who are pretty noted names in the GOP movement and conservative movement. Which I think, if anything, it adds some credibility to Austin being a communicator, that he was able to get those people on board in some way, shape, or form.
He's always been a conservatarian, I guess. And would you say, is he, maybe Ron Paul is and Rand Paul, but he's definitely in the Libertarian Party, he's been one of the more prominent voices for a more conservative ideology in terms of libertarian politics. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a conservative ideology. I mean, I think it's just a different perspective on the fundamental basics of libertarianism. So, you know, one of the biggest issues that Austin got flack was for his support of a pro-life. And Austin's his whole premise behind the pro-life argument as a libertarian is that if we do not allow the most innocent among us, the unborn, have the ability to exercise their rights to even live, then how can we argue that that's a libertarian position to be pro-choice? And I don't think that those who are in the pro-choice camp are you know, monsters or anything like that. But I think it's a very important thing that we need to discuss as libertarians. And really, you know, I know we're going to have people butt heads no matter what, but I don't think a pro-life argument for libertarianism makes him at all conservative. I think it makes him, at the very least, ideologically consistent in his applications of liberty to all those, you know, both born and unborn.
Yeah, I would consider myself a pro-life libertarian. I believe that life begins at conception and that the child in the womb has a right to life just as the mother does.
Mm-hmm.
But there's plenty of libertarians who are pro-life or pro-choice, who believe that it is a woman. It's the life doesn't begin at conception. I guess that's what they believe, and that that they have that their body is their property and their right to see as they like. The libertarian movement, I would say, is 50-50 on this issue. It's really one of, like, in greater politics, abortion is a very divisive issue. But in the libertarian movement, it's one of those things where everybody's just kind of laid down their arms and agreed that we're not going to agree on this issue. Let's talk about economics and war and privacy and other things. Right, Harry?
Correct. Things that you can actually affect and go out and change. My stance on it is that I am pro-choice and I choose life. So if you also want to choose life and you need some help, you know, I will help you. I will help you get through things. I'll give you help you get through those things. And it also, at the end of the day, it is someone else's choice. It's not mine. If when it comes, I will make the choice that if it I will help anyone help make that choice. If they need that help, they want just someone to talk to. But at the end of the day, my stance would be life always.
Sure.
Yeah. Because it is about protecting that other person's individual liberties inside of another person. So
right,
switch it. You know, it's a position, and it is a good, like, it's not completely split down the center, but it is a very diverse of topic. It's a third rail of any type of political discussion. So if you have you do this on an open radio or a live stage, and you bring this up, it's a third rail, and it gets people talking in the wrong way.
Sorry about that. You
know, and it brings it up. Like, I remember being there on at Pork Fest for Free Talk Live, and someone brought it up just on the radio, and just watched the whole crowd want to get up on the microphone, want to talk about it, or just call in and just want to talk about it.
Yeah. So, Brian, are you a pro-life or a pro-choice libertarian?
I'm 100% pro-life. Yeah, a little bit about my backstory. I you know, grew up in a very staunch Republican family, you know, Christian family, and you know, not only is that the pro-life argument a tenet of my personal beliefs in terms of you know, the Christian faith and you know, really going ahead and valuing the life of the unborn, but also, you know, as I you know, grew up through my transformative years and started to really look into libertarianism, it fit with what I was looking at as libertarian views in terms of, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for both those alive and those who are going to be alive. I mean, the argument, I mean, love him or hate him, Marco Rubio made a really great point back in CNN during the presidential election, where he said, you know, when you have an unborn baby, it's not going to turn into a tree. It's not going to turn into a cat. It's going to turn into a human being. So, you know, with that in mind, we need to treat the unborn as what is going to develop into a human being, which is something that is gifted certain rights because of the fact it is a human being. So that's I fall on that premise of you know, the unborn who are going to be humans having some form of rights.
Yep. Yeah. That's what I said. Like, it's one of those topics that everybody wants to bring up. Like, when Gunther was born this year, Gunther went to the NICU at 30 weeks. Our, like, next mate and people that helped us inside the NICU, that helped us go through and navigate it, their child was born in, 20 weeks. So, like, watching this,
right,
they sat there at 20 weeks, watch this little bitty baby, and I've got to watch it get up to 8 pounds and get discharged from the hospital when we got, you know, when we gave birth at 30 weeks.
Sorry about that. My microphone was off. Now, Stone Aldridge, superfan Stone. First, I want to say thank you to a couple people. Yes, I just had to end a FaceTime with my best bud, Jeff Ibbert from Barstool Heartland, because I'm podcasting. But
you should just forward him to Seth.
Stone Aldridge says that I Side With quiz had 60% pro-choice libertarians and 40% pro-life libertarians. And I would say that the libertarian movement, by and large, was pro-choice until the last decade, when a lot of Republicans started to really move into the libertarian movement. And I think Austin has helped increase that percentage by being vocal on this issue. So Jeremiah Morrill has it right. Like, abortion really is kind of a settled issue. And the pro-lifers are really only kind of making little advances for their side in some of the in the legislatures, but it's very small advances. It's mainly a fundraising issue. It's one of those issues that's really used to drive donations, like gay rights. Like, gay rights is settled. Like, gay marriage is now the law of the land, and don't let anybody fool you otherwise. Like, it is just, it's never going to go back the way that the Christian conservative movement would like it to go. And I think as libertarians, we celebrate first and foremost the removal of government from marriage completely. But in the meantime, until we can do that fully, everyone should have equal rights under the law, regardless of your religious persuasion. You know, you as a libertarian, I believe, have a duty to have the law treat everyone equally and fairly. Even if you yourself would not have be involved in a church that would do gay weddings. I mean, is that, would you agree with my assessment, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I do take a little issue, though, in terms of the settled law, if you will, and the argument that it's just a fundraising technique, because I think when we as libertarians can look at the differences between, you know, same-sex marriage and abortion, if we're going to be ideologically consistent, in my opinion, I think we have to apply rights across the board equally, and that includes the right for, you know, freedom of choice in terms of loving the one you want to love and thus entering into a contract with them to you know, show the bond that you have in the eyes of the law, but that. That liberty to make a choice, I think the liberty for someone who is unborn should be applied as well. Now, I look at the court cases that we have where abortion has basically been codified, but I argue that it's not applied with the same type of standards that we have with same-sex marriage. So I think that, you know, if we can change enough hearts and change enough minds to the pro-life persuasion, I think we could actually see something, you know, come about in the next, you know, 15, 20 years, especially with the way that we've been able to start getting some conservative justices, you know, to President Trump's credit in, you know, Neil Gorsuch and hopefully a couple more in the near future. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
So I want to thank Stone Aldrich for his comment, but also for the birthday gift that he sent me.
Oh,
Dear Leader's birthday is September 9th. And as I usually like to tell, I will be 34. Ooh. And I turned 18 on 9-9-2001.
Oh.
And I signed up for Selective Service, the draft, on 9-10-2001.
Mm-hmm.
And on 9-11-2001, I shit my pants. So... I want to thank a couple people for giving me birthday gifts through our Amazon wish list, which you can find at the bottom of WeAreLibertarians.com. First, Craig DaCosta sent us a great mic processor to help Greg with his mic technique.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able, and through another donation, I wish I had his name handy. I'll have to look it up real quick. Another mic and another processor this week. Gifted to We Are Libertarians, and then I bought another processor. We're going to sound so good on Thursday. It's going to be ridiculous. We're going to be broadcast quality, despite us having all of the windows open and fans running in the background of this episode and the echo in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Our game is usually a little more on point.
For the on-the-road episode.
Yeah, so thank you so much to Craig DaCosta. I literally had that processor in my Amazon cart, ready to buy it the next day, and then I showed up home, and it was on my front doorstep. It was beautifully gift-wrapped. It was so thoughtful and so nice of Craig. He also became a $100 a month donor, a subscriber, and he's now in a private chat with you, Kat,
mm-hmm.
Greg, and myself, and Jason Doolittle, who's also another $100 a month subscriber. So we want to thank those guys so much for their donations. And Stone was going to... Stone, I got distracted by the unbelievable entitlement of the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. Apparently, being a secondary podcast on our network, like the Boss Hog of Liberty, which is the latest hit of the We Are Libertarians network.
It's not that hard.
But I know, but they think that they should get all my leftover equipment. And if you don't know what that is, each week, Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis explore life in Henry County, Indiana. And they just had an awesome article written about them in the local newspaper, the mm-hmm. Courier-Times-Journal, which you can see at the We Are Libertarians Facebook page. And tune in on iTunes and sample them today. It says here that Dear Leader wants you to, but if Jeremiah asks me for another pair of headphones... I'm canceling the podcast. He's turning into the Bernie Sanders of the network.
Going to build a wall around his podcast.
No, we love all our friends at the Boss Hog of Liberty. They're hosting my birthday party Saturday night, so be tuned to the Snapchat, we, the letter R, Libertarians, for that. what was I going to say? But Stone was going to find some libertarian condoms, which, joke's on him, I don't use condoms.
What?
I'm celibate, okay? That's just you, pervert. he tried. He tried, but he sent me a nice flag, and he sent me more D batteries than a porn star could possibly use in a lifetime. So we are stocked up on D batteries and A batteries and ready to go. So I want to thank him and everybody who donates for my birthday. You are loved and appreciated. Now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let Harry thank whoever he'd like, because I have to cough, and if I don't cough, I'm going to throw up.
That was out of the blue. I like to thank Chris D'Avery for giving me, as the super fan, give me my stickers, because I've got other podcasts on my laptop, and I finally got a Weird Libertarian sticker on my laptop, which I like having, because I take my laptop everywhere, and it's nice to rep, you know, the podcast that I'm actually on instead of other podcasts, you know.
All right, thank you so much, Harry. The Mark Kindred donated some cool stuff to the network, so thank him. So let's talk about DACA. So I started seeing about DACA, which I thought was like a horrible 80s retro band or something that had made a reappearance, but DACA started showing up in my newsfeed today, and I had no idea what it was or what it did. And so I looked into it, and it's an American immigration policy founded by the Obama administration in June 2012. DACA allows certain illegal immigrants who entered the country as minors to receive a renewable 2-year period of deferred action from deportation and eligibility for a work permit.
Yep.
Now, DACA is it affects a little under 800,000 people. And to receive DACA, you must have come to the U.S. before your 16th birthday. Mm-hmm. And you must be under the age of 31 as of June 15, 2012. So most of these people are 25 to 35. Continuously resided in the U.S. since June 15, 2007. You must be in school, have a diploma or a GED or veteran status. No felony or significant misdemeanor convictions, or else you get sent back, and you're deemed not a threat to national security or public safety. Now, these are the so-called dreamers that we've debated about for a long time, and these are 50, I think I heard today it was like 50 or 45% are in college now or have a college degree.
Yep.
So when Donald Trump talks about the bad hombres, he's not talking about these kids. Like these are not they are not out there, you know, somebody's doing the raping, as Greg likes to point out. These are probably
these are the kids that he said that he loves.
He said everybody loves the dreamers. And so we want to explain this a little bit further. I mean, what are some of the things that in your research, Harry, that you learned about DACA and the dreamers?
All right, first off, the DACA Act is the Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals. So that's like Chris said, this is for the people that got brought here in the backseat of a car, and with they're told to be quiet next to a cousin, and they get brought here to the United States. So they've never been to their country of origin that they were born into. They've only known the United States. My background here in Indianapolis, I was into the I worked for a catering company for several years. I got that took me out of high school, out of college. I went and worked there, so I've met a lot of these people that, you know, were from Mexico, Guatemala, of these different countries who have never been there. They've never been there their entire life, except there was 2, maybe 4 years that they were born and then brought to the United States. So they went to an American elementary school, they went to an American middle school, and they went to an American high school, and here they are with an American education. They speak Spanish and English, but their Spanish is crap, and they barely, and they only really speak English, and they're trying to, one, go to college, just get a job, at least a good paying job. Now, when it comes to like most catering companies, they will, you know, like most like in the hospitality industry, you can look the other way. There's a lot of, you know, they don't pay for a lot of the background checks. So there's a lot of, these are the type of jobs that they will have to get, so they don't pay that well.
Right.
You know, so like it's hard for them to want to start a family or do other things. And it's not any like, and they actually have legitimate jobs, and but they want to do something else, and they just can't. So they can't go to school,
and they're stuck in this limbo, and they kind of always have been. And the part of the problem here is that this was done under the executive order, because Congress wouldn't act on it. So Obama right. did it under executive order, and the problem with governing under executive order is that it is not a permanent part of law, and the next president can undo it, Brian.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I actually wrote an article the week after the election saying, you know, it's the executive actions that Democrats had helped give Obama that is making Trump so scary. Because I mean, when it comes down to it, what just happened to, or I guess this past week with DACA, it's more, I wouldn't say like a true end to the DACA program. It's going to be more of like a symbolic act, because I mean, honestly, I really don't think we're going to see Trump, you know, go ahead with this. It's going to be more of a political bargaining chip. I mean, like I joked earlier, Trump said he's been on tape saying that he loves the Dreamers. The Dreamers are the kids that he says that, you know, they should deserve to stay. And, you know, when as soon as this happened, he went out and he tweeted that it's time to work with Congress to get any meaningful immigration reform passed, which, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. And Trump is 100% right here, because, you know, whether you support the Dreamers staying in America as a legal status, or I'm sorry, not a legal status, but a protected status, or you want to see them deported, it's not the executive's authority that should be determining that. It should be through Congress, as it's laid out in the Constitution. I mean, really, anyone who knows how Trump operates, they know that this was done right now for the sole fact that, you know, Congress is coming back. This is going to put DACA right on their table, mm-hmm. and it's going to be in the news. And it's going to force both Republicans and Democrats to take a position, unpopular or not, with their base, whatever it may be. And for Democrats, it's obviously going to be to keep the Dreamers. And for Republicans, that's going to be the main issue for them going forward, because we're approaching 2018 midterms. And the polling shows that the whole Dreamer issue, it's only really a strong issue in terms of wanting the Dreamers deported with the solid base conservatives, which is, you know, I think it's less than 20-some-odd%. Whereas the general public, by and large, they don't care. They want the Dreamers to stay, and for good reason, as we mentioned earlier, as Harry mentioned earlier. So I think that, you know, going back to the original point that you brought up, Chris, like, yes, this is 100% the fault of a too powerful executive. And if anything, this should be another example of why, you know, Democrats and Republicans should always seek to limit the power of the executive, because when it comes down to it, you're only guaranteed your party in office as the executive for 4 years to 8 years. So just like we're seeing now, Trump is reversing in 8 years, well, not even 8 years. I guess it was 4 years of Obama policy, just by him signing a piece of paper. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, both Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, and when it comes down to it, like my pure stance on it, as you know, as I see it, is one, free people should be able to travel where free people go, and let the free market determine immigration. Basically, if you can find a job here, you can work here, go ahead. Don't care. But that's my purest stance.
Right. Well, human freedom demands that people have the right to move where is most prosperous. And so in history, when you see immigration patterns, that's where more freedom leads. That's where more freedom exists. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem mm-hmm. to be that doesn't coincide with the modern conservative movement.
Right. Yeah. They don't really see. No. Yeah. They don't see that. And a lot of them, like, also like, so there were certain states that also tried to pressure Trump into making a move. Like, they started a lawsuit, and we were trying to pressure Trump to actually make a move onto it. But there's also a lot of bad information out there on it. There's also a lot of fear. So if you're listening to this and you are a DACA holder, do understand that they're not going to take that registry list, and hand it over to ICE. That's not happening.
They're just not going. No. And by the time, let's look at this realistically. Trump gave Congress 6 months mm-hmm. essentially to deal with this. This is going to put pressure on Congress. I think I saw Durbin, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, and Lindsey Graham Lindsey Grahamnesty talking about this today, and they both seem to be confident that there was consensus in both house in the both the House and the Senate to get this done and and cement this into law. Because the reality is, you if you're deporting a million millennials, you're deporting 800,000 millennials back to countries where they don't belong. It's a political nightmare, and politicians are selfish, and they're going and Donald Trump is selfish. And so while it may be good for the base to punish this, he can get away with it if Congress passes it. But if he were doing an executive order like Obama did, he wouldn't. Now, for Obama, it's rare for a president to criticize the predecessor. I don't think you've ever heard any time that, yes, there's a bird outside. That's what you hear in the background. You hear the highway. I'm right by I-65 or 69. I don't know which one.
No, I was going to talk about, like, no, Obama criticized Bush all the time.
Well, no, as sitting president, his predecessor, yes. But when you are the former president, you don't talk about your predecessor. So, like, if you listen to George Bush speak today, even, I heard George Bush give a speech at in New York after he released a book of his paintings recently, and he
tax write-offs.
He said, you know, people who followed me in the office may or may not have done things that I wouldn't have done, but, you know, here's my opinion on it. Like, he didn't even say Obama's name. Like, he's just very... like trying not to criticize former presidents. Bill Clinton did not do that with George Bush.
Right.
And Barack Obama has not really done that with Trump until today. And Barack Obama wrote on his Facebook page, you can see the whole statement there, but he said, to target these young people is wrong because they have done nothing wrong. It is self-defeating because they want to start new businesses, staff our labs, serve in our military, and otherwise contribute to the country we love. It is cruel. So he criticized the sitting president, which is usually pretty uncommon for someone to do to their predecessor. But there's nothing common about Donald Trump, and I would expect to just get used to every president from here on out criticizing Donald Trump ever.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be the easy one. But like most of the disinformation, like the conservative,
it'd be so popular.
Yeah, the conservative red meat also on this is that. They can also do is like the people who are former Dreamers or DACA members that they can easily like, well, if you're DACA, they can make an easy express lane for American citizenship if you want that.
Right.
But the other thing is, too, is like the DACA program, it really, to me, going more research into this immigration thing for DACA, it just more of a seemed like a stale over or a do nothing bill, basically. Granted, I saw people signing up for this because this one thing was quick and easy. This was quick, easy. You fill up this form. Now, you some people who are DIP, they're like, what do you mean this wasn't easy? Hey, it's a heck of a lot easier than hiring an immigration attorney and going through all the different steps. Because if you applied for DACA, you could have got an immigration attorney and spent, granted, thousands of dollars in all these steps. You could have got your green card and visa or worked your way to American citizenship here.
I love Donald's tweet today at 8:04 a.m., Congress, get ready to do your job. DACA! Like, it's just D-A-C-A exclamation point. It's so bizarre. Now, final thoughts on DACA. Brian, go ahead. Brian Nichols of the Libertarian Republic with this.
Yeah, I mean, final thoughts on DACA. I personally think that if you have been in America a majority of your life and you have done nothing wrong, then there's no reason you shouldn't stay. If you're a productive member of society, then be a productive member of society. I don't care where you were born. But I think, again, it comes down to looking at what Trump just did. That is something we'd be worried about as both, libertarians, Republicans, conservatives, Democrats, because, it just takes the swipe of a pen to change everything. And if we're not going to stand up and actually push for, our elected officials to follow constitutional procedures and do immigration as it's supposed to be done through Congress, then we're just going to see in 4 or 8 years, the exact opposite happen. So get to work. I agree with Trump.
Harry?
Greg Lenz smiles somewhere.
he probably does. With the whole DACA fiasco thing, you have to keep the DACA members for the simple fact of to To me, if you buy into this stupid system of the United States and go with it, in order for the Ponzi scheme of Social Security to keep going and to... It's going to hard to remain solvent, but it's a Ponzi scheme. So if you keep pumping in with members, it keeps the Ponzi scheme going. So you need the extra. You need these immigrants. It's
good point. Good point.
Yeah.
So let's move on to North Korea. North Korea escalated.
North Korea?
What'd I say? So North Korea, don't distract me, Harry. You're on double secret probation as a co-host. Don't test me. North Korea, what did North Korea do this week? They launched like the biggest nuclear test. There was like it shook the Richter scale, or what happened, Harry or Brian? My show prep on this fell apart as it usually does when it comes to North Korea because I just kind of don't care.
They did several different things. They launched a missile back into the sea over Japan. They also did a hydrogen bomb test up underground in North Korea, which I personally claim bull crap on.
Right.
If you do any research into like the hydrogen bombs, like they would have to have one, they have to get the material for it and then get it refined correctly. Two, they have to have all the electricity to be able to run this thing. Now, granted, could they have had it with enough nuclear reactors? Yeah, maybe, possibly. But the way a hydrogen bomb works, they're going to need a lot of freaking power.
Right.
And most hydrogen bombs are not portable. Yeah, it's too hard. It's more of a good scare tactic. It's more of like but the thing is, you can still do this, I don't know if I'll say the same effect with like enough bomb underground to just shake something. It's more of like, in order to know they actually had a nuclear bomb or like a hydrogen bomb, you really have to test the soil.
Brian?
Sorry, Brian.
No, I mean, no, that's pretty much, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's just, I'm torn because, as I've said many times, I'm still a recovering Republican, and I look at this and I just think, you know, at what point do we want to say enough's enough? Because it's a legitimate threat towards America. I mean, we know they've been doing missile tests. We have the documents. Mm-hmm. They've been doing the missile tests. And at what point do we allow a rogue nation like North Korea, who, I mean, let's all be honest, Kim Jong-un's, he's freaking insane. I mean, there's something mentally wrong with him.
I think he has a lot of charm. Okay, I don't know why you're bagging on him. There's something charming about my fellow dear leader.
It's the haircut.
I don't think he's insane. He's very logical because he's also scared and he's also put into a box. Because the situation that he's at is that he's got to keep ramping up the revolution inside that one country on him because of the simple fact of there's no end game for him other than a box.
Well, when I say insane, I don't mean politically. I think that what he's doing is politically genius because he's trying to do what Pakistan has done. He's trying to get North Korea the ability to have a nuclear weapon. Mm-hmm. For which then they are on equal playing field with other nuclear powers. I say insane because I look at how brainwashed the Kim Jong family has made North Korea, and how, I mean, they have basically made it into a Hitler-esque, you know, third Reich almost in North Korea, where, you know, they have their own versions of concentration camps. And I just think that for someone to be able to be the face of something so horrid, there must be something wrong mentally with that person. Whether it's that they are brainwashed, you know, from a young age, or they just truly believe that they themselves are that all powerful, with our dear leader, you know, being the exception, that they can, you know, just destroy the livelihoods of those within their country because it suits their own needs.
Right.
Yeah, because it is a prison, and it's awful, because even if you get everyone's there ratting on everybody there, it's that awful 1984 prison state there, and everyone's a prisoner, even right. even the Kims, that whole family, they're prisoners themselves.
Yeah. I want to play a video from the American Enterprise Institute, and it's called "Why Does North Korea Want Nukes in 60 Seconds?" Now, I've not played video, so hopefully this goes very smoothly. So this is called "North Korea, Why Do They Want Nukes in 60 Seconds?" from AEI.
What explains North Korea's relentless quest for nukes and missiles? These programs are obviously not some bargaining chip, and regime survival is hardly their only purpose. My take, the North Korean regime intends eventually to fight a limited nuclear war in the Korean Peninsula and win it. Pyongyang plans confrontations it can win. The North Korean regime is not suicidal. It could not have lasted this long if it were. Its threats and provocations are never sudden, impulsive outbursts. They're always carefully planned, rehearsed well in advance. If Pyongyang can force an American president to blink in a future Korean crisis, then the U.S.-South Korean military alliance will collapse. U.S. forces will be out, and the Kim family regime will take a giant step towards settling the still unfinished Korean War on its terms. All the pieces for the North's design are slowly but deliberately falling into place. The nukes, the missiles, the cyber war component. America and her allies must wake up to that design and counter it while there is still time. To learn more about...
Now, the American Enterprise Institute is more conservative, on the conservative side of the think tank. So, of course, they're going to be calling for action instead of what antiwar.com, which we will announce here in just a second, what they wrote. Justin Raimondo had a great article. Do you guys agree with that assessment by the AEI? Brian, I heard you make a noise.
I don't.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't. I mean... North Korea has nothing to gain if they start nuclear war. I mean, there literally is nothing to gain, because when we say mutually assured destruction back in the Cold War, it was truly mutually assured destruction. If North Korea decides to launch a nuclear war, I mean, or a nuclear bomb and start a nuclear war, I mean, they will be wiped out in a blink of an eye, and the destruction that they cause would only be a fragment of what would be dealt upon them. So I think politically and militarily, it makes no logical sense for North Korea to actually start a nuclear war, but it does make more sense for them to have a nuclear weapon that they can then use as a bargaining chip for not only economic purposes, but also for getting a seat at the table and having a voice on a global stage. That's the only logical step I see them making in this pursuit of a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, I agree. They're not dumb. They understand that if they were to have a nuclear war on that tiny little peninsula, it just won't add up. Most people, it's easy to get to. If you get on YouTube, just watch the day after Hiroshima, the documentary. It will show you like what happened that in that little itty bitty town after like if we dropped after the United States government dropped the that nuclear bomb on Hiroshima, and watching the devastation, the destruction that happened miles out, and the way it worked to the people. So anyone who it's required watching for anyone that like salves like, yes, we should put the nukes on the table. It's like, no, this is a horrible weapon. The way this thing kills is horrible. You know, talking about how people, you know, the luckiest people that died from this stupid bomb was the people who were directly underneath it that got killed by the light of it that turned instantly into carbon. Those people were lucky.
The American conservative was founded by Pat Buchanan and falls under the paleoconservative label, which is libertarian-ish, especially in foreign policy. And they released an article by Daniel Larrison this week called Talking to North Korea is the Best Option Available. And I want to read just a little bit of this because I thought it was very succinct. There are usually three main objectives to directly negotiating with a rogue authoritarian regime. The first and least serious objection is that it rewards their behavior, but this is a silly reason not to negotiate with another government if doing so allows ours to make progress in resolving a dispute. The second very tired objection is that diplomacy has been tried and failed, but in most cases this is either not true or very misleading. In this case, U.S. and allied diplomacy secured an agreement that was succeeding in limiting North Korea's nuclear program, and then the Bush administration blew it up in pursuit of the fantasy of getting North Korea to give up even more. That backfired badly and led to the first nuclear test and North Korea's withdrawal from the NPT. The third objection is that the other regime can't be trusted to abide by any agreement that it makes. That is always a possibility in making any agreement, but if the agreement is perceived to be mutually beneficial, both parties will have strong incentives to honor its term. Also want you guys to take a look at another article. We've posted this up on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page. Justin Raimondo wrote this article. What's the title of the article, Harry? I know that you've got up. I've just got a little extract from it.
The Korean Crisis, A Way Out.
Yeah, Justin Raimondo at antiwar.com is a great writer that you should follow. The latest North Korean nuclear test coincides with leaks from the Trump administration that Washington is demanding renegotiation of CORUS, the U.S.-Korean Free Trade Agreement, and is preparing to withdraw from it. And therein lies a possible, albeit unintentional, resolution to the crisis of the peninsula. And he argues that we're going to withdraw from the South Korean agreement, which I don't anticipate that happening. I can't imagine that happening, but it is an interesting theory. And then there are also many people in South Korea who are now asking the United States to put nuclear weapons in South Korea now, which I also do not think that that will happen. So what are some other things, interesting views that you've read on this, Brian?
I'd say the most interesting perspective I've had is the relationship that we will find between ourselves and Japan and South Korea due to our inaction. One of the notions that I've heard toyed around is that if we do not take a hard approach to trying to deal with this threat, that Japan and South Korea, who are arguably our strongest allies in the Pacific, would then have some negative ill will towards the United States going forward. The other is the interesting relationship we're seeing happen between China and Russia. Both China and Russia have taken a stance against any intervention with North Korea militarily. And I think that's interesting just because, not only with our current relationship with Russia, but also the fact that China is, easily one of our largest trading partners. And I genuinely am interested, and I say that, not hoping it happens, but I'm genuinely interested to see what would happen if North Korea does something drastic, what that will then turn into for the relationship between the United States and subsequently Russia, not only militarily, but also economically.
All right. Final thoughts. Anything, Harry?
It's eventually going to come to head. South Korea does want more weapons there, but China and Russia probably will not want the United States dropping 1A nukes there that close to their borders. No matter how nicey nice we are to them, they don't want our nukes that close with on land. There are ways out of this, hopefully peacefully, because China and Russia, what they're mostly worried about is the refugees coming out of North Korea after a war like that and having to deal with all these unskilled people from the 1950s there. But North Korea is a gigantic rabbit hole. It's most things you read about North Korea, you have to understand that the country is it's in a very, very weird state, and that most of the people and the government also understands that country mostly is sustained by black market deals. Most people get their food through black market deals. Most of the officers eat and get all their money from black market deals. That's what keeping that country afloat. Whatever they're doing right now, they've got long planning on this. Who knows? So that's what I got.
Brian? Final thoughts?
I think Harry pretty much hit, I think Harry hit the nail on the head. I mean, honestly, I just think that this is I don't want to say it's a no-win situation, but it's pretty darn close to it. Either the United States makes an action towards North Korea militarily and it blows up in our face, or we hold off with inaction and we watch as North Korea possibly does something horrendous that we haven't seen happen on this on the face of the earth since 1945. So I'm not optimistic at all in any regards with the outcome of this whole North Korea threat.
All right. Now let's move on to our next topic. It is a video showing a Utah nurse screaming, being handcuffed after refusing to take blood from an unconscious victim. Now, this got a lot of circulation in libertarian circles, but I don't know how many people outside of our circle saw it. And I'll play a little bit of the video that went viral after we explain it a little bit. But a nurse says she was, this is from the Salt Lake Tribune, a nurse says she was assaulted and illegally arrested by a Salt Lake City police detective for following a hospital policy that does not allow blood draws from unconscious patients. Footage from University Hospital and officer body cameras show Detective Jeff Payne and nurse Alex Wubbles in a standoff over whether the policeman should be allowed to get a blood sample from a patient who had been injured in a July 26 collision in northern Utah that left another driver dead. Now, Wubbles said the blood cannot be taken from an unconscious patient unless the patient is under arrest, unless there is a warrant allowing the draw, or unless the patient consents. The detective acknowledges in the footage that none of these requirements are in place, but he insists that he has the authority to obtain the draw, according to the footage. At one point, Payne threatens to take Wubbles to jail if he doesn't get the sample and accuses her of interfering with a criminal case. And he says, I can either go away with blood and vials or a body in tow. So this is just a little bit of the video we'll play for you.
Is that... Am I fair to surmise that? Alex, you're
not ready. She's on the phone talking to probably a superior.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I have no idea why he...
Done. You're under arrest. We're going.
So this is...
Okay. No, we're done. We're done. You're under arrest. We're going. We're done.
Not okay!
He's now cuffing her.
Administration on the way.
She can sit in my car while we're coming.
This is unnecessary, man.
Now that video was from his body camera, and you can find that if you just Google her name. You'll find the video pretty much anywhere. Harry, you brought this to my attention, and you were very triggered by this.
Yeah, it's very frightening to watch, one, just someone just assaulted like that, and to watch this contempt of cop go out like this. Because usually when people see this, they don't get to see this long view of contempt of cop or against a working professional. Usually it's someone who's been pulled over or someone just walking, and they're, you know, a lot of people can dismay and go after the, you know, like, well, they're being a smart butt, you know. But this is a nurse who got contempt of cop, who got advice from hospital staff and was trying to do everything. The worst part about, like, some of the worst parts about the video of the illegal arrest is the other cops around him watching the arrest happen. And watching office administrators and going like, hey, we're having someone from administrative. They're coming down here if they really want to talk to you, you know, and you're making a mistake. Stop what you're doing on this whole aspect of it. Yeah. It's very gruesome to watch. And to some people, this is their first view of contempt of cop. It's a lot of people like this.
Now you keep saying that. What does that mean?
That's just telling being dead to rights, having your rights, knowing your rights, and having the ability to tell a cop no.
Right.
They're not used to that.
They're not. So it's contempt to a police officer in the same way of contempt of court.
Yeah. Regardless of what your stance is on police officers, they're human and they can be wrong. And when you a lot of cops do not like being wrong. They feel if you question their authority, you're questioning every authority of every officer. But if... And they a lot of cops take it to a massive extreme. Not all cops, but a lot of cops do. I have met cops, and I have you know, mostly Lawrence police officers,
right?
And I've
where,
like
where you live,
where I live, you know, in Lawrence, and some Indiana State Troopers, where like they got the law wrong, and I told them that, and scared the crap out of me because I was like, oh crap, I'm going down for contempt of cop, and they just stop, pause, call a superior, and go, oh, you're right. Sorry.
Right.
And you're like, man, I wish I had this on tape.
Yeah. Now, for those...
Because it usually doesn't happen that way.
For those of you playing at home, Harry is black.
Mm-hmm.
So he is our racism
what?
Insurance. Yeah, yep. I know. If you're in Dear Leaders...
I didn't know that.
If you're in the nobility donating $10 a month or more, you could watch the live stream and see Harry for yourself. His mm-hmm. beautiful hair has been destroyed by my headphones.
Yep. It's all smushed down.
Now...
And that can...
It's
one
like
of the
sheep.
And you know, one of the contempt of cop was being pulled over by a police officer with my Glock on my hip.
Right.
In my car. That one was fun.
Yeah, I bet. I can't imagine. Like, it really hit home for me one night when we were doing the podcast. And, you know, whenever we talk about issues with police brutality, we always try to get you involved because you have a perspective. I don't know what it's like to be a minority. I'm white. I'm a man. I'm successful. I'm handsome. I'm tall. I'm single. I don't know what it's like to be like you, Harry. Now, so you give a perspective that we don't often have. And when you said, you know, I watched the Philando Castile video and I'm afraid to leave my gun at home, so I don't want to, because I don't want to get killed.
Yeah.
Like, I've never had that thought in my life. Like, I've never had the idea that I might get killed by a police officer in the back of my mind, even when I'm under at a stop being pulled over. You know, I had a situation where I may have been going 50 over the speed limit and got caught.
Nice.
But you know, in that situation I was like, hey, what's up, officer? He's like, hey man, how are you? Now you, Harry, you don't know what that's like. Don't know what this privilege is like.
No.
And so, but I think it really is, it's something that white Americans don't understand, is that interactions with police officers for black men like yourself is very scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially like when you've got them dead to rights about different laws and rules. I remember getting pulled over with my cousin. We were out in Greenfield, out in the middle of BFE, going to Fields Junkyard, getting some from the junkyards. And
right.
And we were speeding, honestly. But who cares? The speed limit is real too low for that road. There's nothing hip at cornfields. And the fact that it's not 65, 70 in that area is stupid.
Yeah.
That's besides the point. Moving on, but we got pulled over. My cousin, who's Puerto Rican, so, you know, we're out there in the middle of BFE in the cornfields.
I don't even know how that worked.
With my Puerto Rican cousin and myself. So he gets pulled over, they're getting processed, and they come over to my window. I'm just sitting there, and they're like, ask for my license. And I was like, I don't have to give you identification. I'm a passenger. You know, I'm a passenger in this car. I'm not the one driving. And he sat there and demanded identification. So me, being a huge smartass, I handed him a a lot of you can remember remember Mech Warrior. They used to pass out, if you were high enough in the game, you could get an ID with your name, your call sign on it, and everything of your Mech Warrior call tag. I handed him that.
All right, that's ballsy. when you first saw this video with the nurse, what was your first reaction, Brian Nichols?
Yeah. Well, let me rewind, Chris, because you asked, you know, did this get outside our libertarian circles? And yes, 100% it did. My newsfeed on Friday was filled with. Now, I went to a college in New York that was predominantly nursing majors, and they were livid. I mean, it went viral on my Facebook feed from people of all different political ideologies, conservative, liberal, libertarian, you name it. That were just outraged at what happened here. Now going besides the fact that what just happened was awful, we have to look at two different things too. Number one, it's the hospital's agreement that they had made with the police department that, number one, you could not take the blood from an unconscious person unless you had a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, had consent from a conscious person. Or number three, that the patient was under arrest. So none of those were maintained. Which means that, you know, the nurse, based on just the contractual agreement that the police department and the hospital had entered into willingly, that since that wasn't met, that she did her job.
Yep.
But let's go beyond that. Constitutionally, this is a strict violation of the Fourth Amendment. And I forget the name of the court case, but I think it was just in the past year. There was actually a case that reaffirmed that you needed to have consent or a warrant to draw blood from an unconscious person or conscious person. You couldn't draw blood forcibly. So, I mean, on all levels, both, you know, between two consenting parties entering into a contractual agreement, but also on a constitutional scale, this was a strict, gross violation of anything that was could ever be contrived as just. And there was an article from the Daily Caller that just came out last night, I believe, that was saying that she was asking for it because of her demeanor. And it's garbage that there's this kind of mentality that we cannot look at the law authorities and the law enforcement that we have, the authorities that we have, with some form of questioning in their actions without having to say they were right 100% of the time. So if anything, I hope that this opens up people's eyes across the board, that there is police out there who will take advantage of their authority because they can, because they have a badge. And unfortunately, like you've experienced, Harry, that happens, you know, far too often in your own personal life and many African Americans' lives, you know, out there, just because of the sole fact that you're Black.
Yeah.
So if anything, I do hope that this helps raise some awareness of, you know, police overstepping their bounds across all spectrums.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, like, it's not also based on color scheme. It's just based of just dealing with law enforcement officers. There's a huge mentality of law enforcement that don't want to be told no and don't want to be challenged. It's not all based on color of skin. It happens to people with mental disabilities, people who are listen to that. I saw that one video. The guy was having a stroke and they tasered the guy. And it happens it happens to white people, it happens to Asians, it happens to everyone that have an interaction with a law enforcement that's having a bad day, or is just like something's wrong with them, like they've got something else is wrong with them, and emotionally or physically, you know, usually mostly wrong with them. And it crosses the spectrum, and hopefully it touches people. A lot of people say that stuff doesn't happen. It's like, hey, I can take 8 hours and just show you video of just cops taking advantage.
Tom, you say you've never seen a storm like this.
Yeah, Tom.
Aaron, only one comes to mind.
That was CNN just automatically started playing. We'll play that for you in just a moment.
But they're like you can sit there and just take 8 hours of like a video and just show people this type of stuff. But the cool thing is watching like this spread. Like even a Blue Lives Matter page said this was gross and that this was gone. This is past the pale. And it did go through. It went through liberals. It went through conservatives. It went everywhere. It was kind of weird to watch this go off, and I was telling a lot of people that were sharing this story where I was like, whoa, 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 this is a lot of red meat, this is sharing around everywhere, sit on this, something's up. And it kept checking out everything. There's great hospital statements, everything, like this thing factually happened. It just kept getting more and more layers on, you know, the crap that this going through, this doctor that nurse was going through, and because they were just so just wanting the blood of that guy. It's just to, you know, because they were probably suspecting like some, you know, because if the hospital takes his blood, it falls under HIPAA. That's his blood, you know. If it's the they can't get it once, so the hospital may find out that they're, unless like he was actually involved in an accident that killed someone, you know, if the hospital pulls that blood, that's his. They can't do anything with it. So what they're worried about is that he's sitting up there, if that guy is drunk or is on a drug, that hours are going to tick by and that thing's going to fade out of and not be detected through the system.
All right. Final thoughts very quickly. We're running out of time. Brian Nichols.
I think my final thoughts were covered pretty much there. Yeah, I'll defer to Harry.
My final thoughts is bravo to the Utah hospital showing a good show of force to the Utah Police Department, making sure they can't talk to nurses now. Because honestly, if I was in that hospital that day that nurse got arrested, I would also try to sue the police department, because, you know, what if something happened? If I've gotten hurt or someone had died, hey, you brought a nurse out of the ER and out of the hospital, and there was good one point. They were one nurse short, and it's your freaking fault.
Yep. All right, final issue tonight that we're just going to give you a little bit of an update on Hurricane Irma. It is now the biggest recorded hurricanes ever are 190 miles an hour. This is clocking at 885. Let's play a clip from Aaron Burnett earlier tonight. It's Tuesday, September 5th at 8:30 here. This was just about an hour ago. This was an update on CNN.
And Tom, you say you've never seen a storm like this.
Aaron, only one comes to mind. 2013 in the Western Pacific, it was Super Typhoon Haiyan. It was the largest tropical system to ever make landfall on any landmass on Earth, and it took over 6,000 lives in the Philippines.
Well, that may be a little alarmism here, Tom, but we're having a little internet problem. But I think this... this underlines, while it's loading here, this underlines essentially how powerful this storm is. And we had Katrina, which was a more powerful storm than this, actually, make landfall. And then shortly after that, Rita hit the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't uncommon for two super hurricanes to hit at the same time.
Yeah.
And so this is right now... It is maximum sustained winds of 185 miles per hour, well above 157 miles per hour threshold for a Cat 5. 157 is where it like clocks at. And so it is now in the Caribbean, headed towards Puerto Rico and for Havana and Cuba and Cockburn Town, which is a real place. I just learned this right now looking at this map. It's Cockburn Town. And it is supposed to be a Cat 4 by Friday at 2, and then a Cat 4 and make landfall around Miami sometime around Sunday. And then they're not sure where it's going to go. They don't know if it's going to go up the coast of Miami, head towards the Yucatan Peninsula, go up to the Gulf Coast, God forbid. So they're really not sure exactly where this is going at. So yeah, this is a big and dangerous storm. And let's just play a little bit more of this CNN piece and this fake news.
In Tacloban, this storm system here, Irwin's only 10 miles per hour weaker. So again, to make landfall with something so massive, I mean, it's...
So yeah, that's Tom on CNN, Tom Sauber. And sorry that my internet sucks. So,
yep.
Harry, you'll get on that and fix that for us in no time, I'm sure. So, now, thank you so much for joining us. Our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in Houston, everybody in Florida, and hope everybody is safe down there. All of our Texas listeners, our number one state is Texas in terms of listenership. Second is California. Third is Indiana. And so we just want to thank everybody who listens to the program and... listen, if you know someone in Texas, send them this podcast. Nothing will help them more than listening to We Are Libertarians in this time of need. No, seriously, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Red Cross. Little story from Grandpappy Spangle's past. The Red Cross left my grandfather to die on the beaches of Okinawa and said, no, he's a goner. He ended up living, and he swore to he made everyone in the family swear they were not to donate to the Red Cross as a result. But in times like this, they really do a tremendous amount of good in these disaster areas. And with two major storms at the same time, this is just it's really such a huge stretch for nonprofit organizations like the Red Cross. There's a lot of Christian organizations. There's some libertarian organizations that we're going to tell you about when we record on Thursday. I'll have some libertarian organizations that you can donate to that people have gotten a hold of me with. But be sure, you know, to donate to the Red Cross as they come into this time of need. And, you know, like I said, donate to We Are Libertarians because we are No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. So final thoughts for the entire episode. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. It's so nice to have you back on the show. And now with two episodes a week, we hope to have you on more.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to join my WAL brothers and sister is some.
We got
and no, I really do appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Libertarian Republic. You know, we're even though we're different publications, you know, we do have a lot of similar viewership and readership. So, you know, I really like to help foster that. But no, in terms of the news of the week, I mean, I think the biggest thing is going to be the hurricane coming forward there in the Gulf. If there's any Florida listeners that are listening, you know, if you have to abandon your homes, bring your pets with you. That's just one thing, please, because, you know, believe it or not, they'll be terrified, too. And I think pets are in general like little people. I got my little cat, Moe's, here, so I couldn't imagine leaving him behind. So, yeah, that's if anything, get to safer areas. And, you know, God bless everybody out there in Florida, but also all those recovering from Harvey there in Texas.
Harry?
Wow, yeah, definitely the pet thing, that really gets me. Like, and I also feel sorry for anyone who, like, escaped the flood in Dallas, went back to Florida, and now watch another hurricane come in. So whoever that one person is, you know, be very careful.
It is. My grandparents just moved back up from St. Augustine, yeah. Florida, and there was a major hurricane that was headed towards St. Augustine. It fortunately didn't hit them. But, I mean, the eye of the storm was predicted to hit right where they lived, and... they have a cat, and they evacuated late, and they couldn't take the cat to the shelter. They couldn't take it. I mean, like up and down all throughout central. I mean, it's really tough to try and find a hotel room anywhere south of Lexington right now, I would imagine, because it will be, especially when you wait as long as they did. And so it's just tough to take their pets. But if you can, I mean, please. I mean, it's I couldn't imagine leaving Mittens and Muffins behind. Well, maybe not Mittens, but...
Yeah.
Mittens is getting on my nerves lately, but Harry, your final thoughts?
With that Utah one, you know, just be careful the way you share that around or when you talk to someone about that. Let them... When you want to, if you really want to show that, and they really, especially if they're like a huge like Blue Lives Matter or cop supporter, just show them the video and let them have their own conclusions, and then just be able to talk to them and have that conversation. Try not to beat them down with the whole different thing with it. The other thing I also want to do is I probably put the link back into the Facebook group, but I like everyone jumping in the Facebook group. I like everyone talking in there, but I also have the We Are Libertarians Discord chat. James Neese and I was in there the other night, and we, you know, were playing MMOs and like went on just screeching about like elections and different stuff like late until like the 3 a.m.
Yeah, so if you're a gamer, hit them up. I mean, we really want you guys to connect with us. I mean, we've got a lot of listeners, and it's so much fun for... Part of the best part about the donation program is that we get to meet newer people, because, like, you just, when somebody gives us money, it's like, oh man, that's awesome, you know? And so we get to connect with people. But join your Discord, follow us on Twitch, you know, make sure that you follow all of us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. You have our permission, not just the wall stuff, but our personal stuff too. Please feel free to follow any of us, especially Kat. Send Kat Anagnos a lot of DMs. She loves that. She loves the attention.
Yeah. She loves those.
Someone found her Tinder and tweeted at her. She was really a fan of that. Nudes. Send her nudes. All right. I'm just kidding with that one. You creepertarians, you are something else. We love you.
Yeah. Don't send her nudes. Send her just a screenshot of how many Bitcoins you have.
Right.
Or cattle.
All right. I want to thank everybody who has donated on the Patreon. We are up to literally, as we've been sitting here doing the show, we've had two more people join at the $10 a month level in the nobility. And we're up over 700. I think we're almost at 750 a month, maybe more. And so I want to thank all the people that are $10 up in a month. We have a lot of $5 and up people. Those people get early access to the episode. It's CD quality. It's ad-free. It's a day early. And if you're not listening on that feed, then you're getting ads, and it's 96 or 64K instead of the beautiful, crisp, clear 128, with, totally unedited with all the beginning and end and bonus segments and everything. And you really, it's such a good deal, and it supports us and helps grow independent media. And then at $10 and up, you get access to a special group, and on Tuesday and Thursday nights, you get to watch the show live and contribute, as so many people do. And then 25 and up, you get posters, and you get a dated base of memes that Greg has almost finished. You're going to get a free ticket to our live show on 9/11 if you want it, if you're in town. And then 100 and up, after 2 months, you get to come on the show. You get to be on the show, and you get access to Dear Leader's Chambers. And we've got two of those guys, Craig DeCosta and Jason Doolittle. Thanks so much to you guys at the $25 level. Thanks to Joey Turner, Heidi Aldbridge, Christian Emmons, Dan Dunbar, Doug Stream, Chad Oakage, Christopher Brokoff, and Todd Singer. And then at the $10 level, thank you to Joshua Sexton, Stone Aldridge, Eric Bartline, David Stovall, Brittany Jandrine, Jess Nixon, Justin Mitchell, Derek Mishu, Mike Trunt, Rick Irvine, Zach Felker, Andre Myrick, James Zolads. Listen, I'm bad with names. Send me how to pronounce your name. I'm sorry, especially you, James. James Darling, Eric Neff, Adam Herndon, Nick Economopoulos, Brian Travis, Chris Lane, Ryan Clancy, Ken Walker, Rebecca Cash, and David Anderson. Thanks so much to you guys. We appreciate you supporting us here at We Are Libertarians, and we thank you to everybody that considers donating, and we hope that you will. If you can't donate, just share the show. We appreciate it. You know, this isn't free to do. It costs us around $500 a month to run, and we, you know, take this money and we put it right back into it and upgrade and do more. And it's not a profit-making deal. I think the only one that will start making money is I'm going to pay for Kat's gas because she's driving an hour one way and an hour back to come on the show. So she will be the first unofficial employee of We Are Libertarians. So, but you guys are allowing me to do that for her through your donation. So thank you guys so much for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And on Thursday, we promise.
Greg will be back Thursday.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.